Happy Monday of game week, opening game week. What an exciting time. Camp is over. All that hay is in the barn finally. Today is the day that the depth chart is announced. The big news, of course. The quarterback, who's going to be number one. By the time you're listening to this, you might already know. I don't know, as this is being recorded. Would be really surprised if it's not Kelly Bryant, but who the heck knows. We'll be following it all and bringing it all to you, all the details at TigerIllustrated.com. Season forecast. The highly anticipated season forecast was released Sunday, and I think there were a lot of happy campers in response to the predictions from the three of us at TigerIllustrated.com. Paul's recruiting Monday recruiting insider returns after a few week hiatus, so tons of good stuff in there as usual. Been a great month at TI. A lot of folks, a lot of new subscribers. We are at a record high of subscribers, top 10 in the Rivals Network nationally, so that's really, really cool. If you're listening and you're not a subscriber, highly encourage you to do so. I think you'd be really happy with what you get. Looking forward to the week of coverage, press conference later today, Monday. Also on Tuesday, might even on Thursday, dust off the old video breakdowns, even though there's no game yet to break down. Might get creative with that to bring back that offering. The proud title sponsor of the Clemson Dubcast is Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Blake Smith and Brooke Archenhold, both Clemson grads, both huge fans. The forte of their firm is medical negligence. They represent patients and their family members in medical negligence actions. They also handle all sorts of other complex personal injury litigation. For instance, they handled the Cleveland Park rollover case, also handled the GHS infection cases. Very complex stuff that they're highly trained to do, and they're in the business to help people. I've known Blake Smith for years, dating back to when he taught classes with Terry Don Phillips at Clemson. Had one of our subscribers at TigerIllustrated.com weigh in a few days ago on the message board that he took that class way back when, and it was one of the coolest experiences he had as a student at Clemson. Parham Smith and Archenhold offers free consultations. You can call them at 864-990-4581. And how about the Abernathy getting a prestigious Herbie Award by Kirk Herbstreit? That guy travels the country all fall. And he picked the Abernathy among his five favorite hotels. That is awesome. A lot of ESPN folks stay there when they're in town. And, man, what a statement to what this boutique hotel has done in just a short amount of time to earn that type of distinction from old Herbie. During home football Saturdays, the Abernathy is going to have a tailgate party in their parking lot, starting with the Furman game, of course. They're partnering with Jack Daniels for those events, and they'll feature a DJ, multiple bars, games like cornhole and grilling hot dogs and hamburgers. Also during the week, make sure to check out the Abernathy Taps Bar and Cafe inside. More laid-back, loungy alternative to the bigger, crazier bars in town. Typical bar amenities, but also higher-end wines and liquors for those who have more discerning tastes. Bar opens at 4 in the afternoon. Great gathering spot for a low-key happy hour with friends. So congrats to the Abernathy on the Herbie. Check them out in person right across the street from Lot 2. Also check them out online at www.theabernathy.com. Third guest of the Clemson Dubcast. No long introduction needed with this one. Tim Beray, legendary former sports information director, now in semi-retirement. Doing a lot of work for NBC covering golf, traveling abroad, and sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds like they're treating him really well, and he really deserves it. So let's get to it. This was a fun conversation we had late last week before he hit the road, and a lot of really interesting things to cover. So hope you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
right. We're here with the retired, semi-retired, not sure. What is it? What is it officially,
Tim? I'd probably say semi-retired. I'm not the football communications director anymore, so I'm retired from that position.
But still really busy.
But still really busy, yeah. Larry, I'm having a lot of fun. I'm still doing some things for Clemson, and then I'm still writing for the football program. You'll see my byline in some football program articles. You'll see my byline in the Orange Experience. I'm still going to be doing some golf for Larry Pendley's program. Still going to do the media guides for those, for the men's and the women. But my big activity is actually working for NBC Sports on their PGA Tour coverage. In fact, I've got four tournaments coming up in the month of September. So I'm going to be on the road a lot, including going to Paris for the Ryder Cup.
And, oh, by the way, you've written a book that's about to come out soon?
Yeah, actually, my work from that was still done when I was still a full-time communications director. I actually finished writing it back in March. It's really an extension of the Vault book I did on the history of Clemson football in 2007. The publishers came to me and say, hey, you know, Clemson's done pretty well here the last 10 years. Maybe we need to update this book. So so that's what I did. I just kind of updated the last 10 years, and I think Clemson fans will enjoy it.
Okay, so most people out there know that you're working with golf coverage, but I don't know if many people know the inner workings of that, like what's your routine is when you go to some of these tournaments, including the British Open recently.
Sure, right. Yes, I did do the British Open. So, it all started. I know the producer from NBC Sports Golf, Tommy Roy. He married a woman named Ann Fink, who used to help me run the bookstore basketball tournament at Notre Dame 40 years ago. And we always kept in touch, good friends. When it's time for their kids to go to school, they looked at Clemson because, you know, they of the relationship that I had, so they heard so much about Clemson. Came up here, went to the 2007, I think, Boston College game, and liked it. So both of their, make a long story short there, their two kids came to Clemson. Billy actually worked for me as a student assistant. And Kelly Roy is going to be a senior this year. So both Roys really got into Clemson football. In fact, they have season tickets, although they can't come to all the games. So we went to the Ohio State game in the college football playoff a couple of years ago, and he said at dinner one night, he said, "So when are you going to retire?" And so, you know, I had been thinking about it, and he said, "Well, I got a job for you when you retire." And so he told me about it then. But when we were, you know, a chance to win the national championship, you know, you get a lot of good things to experience when you win a national championship. So I put it off for a year, and then he came back to me when we had dinner again at the. He actually talked to me before the Alabama game this past year. And so this time I took him up on it. And so what I do is I sit in a tower. The holes vary each tournament with Peter Jacobson. And I'm basically Peter Jacobson's stats and research guy. And one of the things I do during the time we're on the air is I have these four big boards, and I keep the hole-by-hole scores of every player that can possibly be in the NBC Sports window, so that when you hear Peter come on and say, "Well, Tiger Woods is here on the 16th green, so far he has four birdies and two bogeys," he's getting that from my chart. Now, you may think, boy, that's really old school, a handwritten chart. But when you think about it, if you watch a golf tournament and see, boy, they, and especially NBC prides itself on going quickly from shot to shot and get as many shots alive as possible. You really only have maybe 3 seconds a heads up that they're coming to you. And so by the time you scroll up or down to find it in a computer, you can actually do it faster if it's handwritten and you just put the chart in front of the announcer. And so that's the way that it's done. Now, in addition to that, I'm responsible for college notes on the guys that are playing. That was obviously what Tommy saw was one of the pluses for me because I've been to most of the NCAA tournaments for 25 years, and so I have a good working knowledge of what these guys did in the pros. But I do a page of college notes on the guys, as many as I can that are in the field. Obviously, you know, there's 20 or 30 guys in each tournament who didn't play college golf, so I don't have to worry about them. But there's quite a few that it did, and NBC's feeling is trying to capitalize on the loyalty that they see in college football and their alumni base and try to capitalize on that. You might notice if you watch Golf Channel coverage a lot, when they go to commercial, they'll have the logos of the colleges that the guys played on the leaderboard. So they've tried to increase that, but it's a lot of fun. So yeah, I sit up there with Peter Jacobson for in the case of the British Open, it was 8 hours a day for four straight days. I mean, those are long days. But everybody at NBC has been great, and they're it's really like a family, and they're all in it together, and we have a good time.
Is there a comfort or a relief in knowing that you're just sort of part of an operation instead of in charge of an operation?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And also the thing about it is when the day's done, the day's done. And it's not a lot of, you know, when you're the SID for a Clemson football game, the game ends, things are just getting started. So I like the fact that when we're off the air at 6 o'clock, I'm done. I can get in a van or get in my car and go back to the hotel when that's over. But yeah, you know, you're right. You know, for 40 years, or at least after Mr. Bradley retired, you know, football games, I was kind of in charge of a lot of things. And so I wouldn't call it pressure, but just, you know, kind of constant. It's almost like you're on 24 hours a day on call. So I kind of like being a little bit more behind the scenes and not in charge of everything.
So I think I'm getting this right. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the prominence of the Clemson football program and Deshaun Watson and all that, had it not been for that, had they been going 7-5 every year, you might have decided to take off a little earlier, or no?
No, I was you know me, and you know stats, and you know numbers. I kind of had it in my mind, 40 years is a good number. And that's enough. I'm 62 going on 63. You know, my best friend growing up had just died of cancer last April. And that kind of had an effect on me, too, that, you know, you're not going to live forever. And if there's things that you would other things you'd like to do and maybe not be quite as hectic, wouldn't be all bad to do. When I hit 40 years, that was probably a good time.
So we're recording this in advance, but it's gonna drop on Monday of Furman Week. Where is your mind gonna be? I mean, is it gonna be weird at all? Thinking about, okay, this has been my routine for forever, and this big important football season is about to get started with this weekly routine, and I'm not there.
Yeah, I'm actually only going to be at one of the first five games because I'm going to be I have four golf tournaments for NBC in the month of September. So, I have not missed a Clemson home game. I've been blessed with good health. I have not missed a Clemson home game since November of 1977. I didn't start working here full time in 1978, but it actually worked out that the senior day game in 1977 was the Notre Dame Clemson game, so I came to that game with Notre Dame. So whatever the home game was before that Notre Dame game in 1977 was the last time I missed a home game. So that'll be strange. In a way, that'll be good because we're going to be on the air the same time the game is going on. So I'm going to be pretty hectic. And doing things for Peter and for NBC. So yeah, that'll be a little bit. a little bit strange just knowing there's, hey, there's a game going on in Death Valley and I'm not there. It's almost like, you know, you have these dreams when you're in the middle of doing that job and you say, oh, did I forget there was a game? And, you know, some kind of nightmare or something. But I'm certainly going to file. I'm going to tape the games that I've missed because starting in October, October 6th, in the Georgia Southern game, the radio network's been kind enough to let me be a part of the broadcast. So I'm going to be on the air for the Clemson games that I can come to that I'm not doing golf with NBC.
Okay, take me back to the Sugar Bowl. In New Orleans, you knew that the end was near, but not many other people.
Right.
You had yet to announce it. One of the favorite photos that I've ever taken and will ever take was I was sitting directly behind you, and I just so happened to take a panoramic shot of from the press box from way up in the rafters, and you were sitting right in front of me, and I actually gave you a picture for your retirement.
You did, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, so
going up in my house.
So were you able to totally focus on your job that night? What was going through your mind? Were you thinking about, man, this is it?
Yeah, I kind of knew it was, yeah, I basically decided early December that was going to be it, but I didn't really tell anybody. And then I don't think we announced it until January 26th. But yeah, I kind of knew that was it, but I just kept it inside. And but I still, you know, had a job to do, and I knew I was still going to, or at least hoped to work till July. So I guess in my mind, you know, I didn't, you know, because I love basketball so much, and I know I still had the basketball season, wasn't that emotional about it. It was the last football game, but it wasn't the last event I was going to go to. So, it was kind of strange, a little bit, you know, bittersweet. And then more so, I kind of kidded. I kidded the three defensive linemen when they announced they were coming back. I told them one day, you know, after I announced they retired, I said, man, I wish I knew you guys were coming back. I wouldn't have retired if I knew you guys were coming back. But I was kidding. Those are all three great guys that I enjoyed working with.
Let's rewind back a long way, 10 years. October 2008, Clemson loses 12-7 at Wake Forest on a Thursday night. Yep. The record then was what, 3-3?
3-3.
Yeah, they were supposed to be top 10, all that. Everybody knows that.
We were number 8 preseason, yeah.
Yeah. Take me back to the immediate aftermath of that game, locker room, press conference outside the locker room with Tommy Bowden. I can remember it like it was yesterday. What are you thinking? What are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Well, even before that game, Terry Don Phillips had told me that you know, we had talked a lot about Tommy's situation, and even after I think we had a close loss to Maryland before
at
then.
Home. Yep.
Yeah, at home, yeah. And I think at that point he and I had a one-on-one discussion that he felt that in his 10th year that it was a realistic goal to win the division at least and play for the ACC championship, and that he felt if he didn't, he would make a change at the end of the season. And so, and being the way he is, he said he also felt he owed it to Coach Bowden to let him know how he stood, which I thought was logical. So, now when he was going to do that, I didn't know. So after we lost to Wake Forest, came back, I had a meeting with Coach Bowden on Friday, and there was no talk of anything about him not being the coach for the next game. It was all on to the next game, and he had decided that Friday that he was going to change quarterbacks, that Willie Korn was going to be, you know, the quarterback. So that turned into a difficult couple of days because Cullen Harper's father didn't take too kindly to that announcement.
Can I interrupt to share an aside related to that?
Yes.
So that Friday, after Tommy Bowden had his teleconference to announce Willie Korn as the new starter. I hang up the phone off the teleconference, call up Cullen Harper's dad, not for comment,
right?
But I mean, I knew him. I had a relationship with him. And I say, what do you think of this news?
Yeah.
He said, what news? And I said, Tommy just announced Willie Korn as a starter. Cullen Harper's dad, he's on I-85 heading from Winston-Salem to Atlanta.
Yeah.
He says, okay, I think I'm going to take a little detour and go to Clemson. Marched into Tommy's office. I don't know what happened, but I don't think it went very well. Anyway,
right.
That's an interesting sort of aside there.
So that kind of added a lot to the dynamics of the situation. Then we actually had a practice on
Sunday,
which turned out to be Tommy's last practice. So it was full speed ahead with Willie Korn as the quarterback, and that's what I was, worried about or just concerned about dealing with, let's put it that way. So then Monday morning I come in, and about 9:30, Coach Bowden calls me and says, hey, come on down to my office. Didn't think anything of it. And so I walk in, and he said, Tim, I just wanted to give you a heads up. By the end of the day, I'm not going to be the coach here anymore. And I was like, whoa. And so he told me that Terry Don had called him down to the office and did just what I just said, that felt he should tell him where he stood. And much to Terry Don's surprise, I mean, to Terry Don had said, at the end of the season, if we haven't won, he would make a change. But Terry Don had no intention of making a change that day. And that's when Tommy suggested, well, why don't we make a change now? And so I guess Terry Don had to kind of reverse field a little bit and wasn't planning on having to deal with it that day. And then they kind of discussed, an interim coach, and Terry Don brought up Dabo, and Tommy thought that would be good. But it was Dabo's hiring was driven by Terry Don. And so, although Tommy endorsed it. So then Terry Don called me to let me know what was going on. And I had already started on the release. And so then by 11 o'clock or 11:30, whatever, they told the staff and we were off and running.
And interestingly, we are conducting this interview in the staff meeting room of the McFadden building, which is where the football staff used to have its meetings, and which is where Terry Don, I guess famously now, met with the staff without Tommy Bowden and pointed at Dabo and said, you're the guy.
You're the guy. Come to my office in 15 minutes or whatever. And so that was the beginning of the most hectic day in Dabo Sweeney's professional career, and 50 years from now we'll say the same thing, I would think.
Yeah, he fired Rob Spence soon thereafter. Did you have any window into that?
I he told me. I didn't find out about it till later on.
Yeah.
The wives started talking and it got out. So in that regard. And then we had a press conference with Tommy, I think, before practice.
Yep.
And then a press conference with Dabo after practice. And it was a crazy day.
I want to welcome a new sponsor to the podcast, Tandem Payment, credit card processing company headquartered in Greenville that has offices located throughout the Southeast. One of the owners, 2005 Clemson grad, and he's forced the other owner to become a huge Clemson fan as well. All you business owners out there, you know how painful it is to get the weekly phone calls from the national processing companies promising, quote, the lowest rates in the industry. Tandem approaches this part of it completely differently, face to face. Why would you trust the majority of your hard-earned money to someone over the phone? Tandem utilizes a consultative approach where they look out for the best interests of their potential clients. Tandem is the first company across the country to receive the BBB Award for Integrity. Also, Hot Rod McDowell, former Clemson running back, is a part of Tandem. The newest program that Tandem offers is called Cash Discount. You can eliminate the 100%, up to 100% of your annual credit card processing fees. The best part, it encourages more cash transactions inside your business. Plus, you save the typical processing fees you pay annually. Call Tandem today to learn more about how to eliminate your credit card processing fees. 864-672-1570 on the web, tandempayment.com. Let's rewind for a second. Okay, so you, before the Wake Forest game, that's, I guess, the week before, week of maybe, Terry Don confided in you that he was going to, I guess, issue this sort of ultimatum, I guess, and that it was only fair that he tell Tommy. Right. You and Tommy were really close.
Yes.
Did that present any conflict to you in your mind in that, okay, well, wow, should I wait for Terry Don to tell Tommy, or should I maybe let Tommy in on this, little nugget?
I felt that had to be communicated between the two people directly involved, so I didn't say anything to Tommy about it. I figured I'd let nature take its course. Plus, I also, you know, the way college football is, things can change dramatically. I mean, what if we'd have gone to Wake Forest and beaten them soundly and looked great against Wake Forest, had a terrific defense then? Things could have changed. And, of course, my frame of reference was 2003, after we lost to Wake Forest, you know, there was a lot of talk that there would be a change. And then we win the rest of the games that season, and Tommy gets a new contract.
Yep.
So that's why I always let it play out.
So with 99% of people, Clemson fans, Clemson media, anybody who was around back then, they might not admit it now, but at best, they weren't sure Dabo was the right guy.
Right.
Right. So, and at worst, they thought he was a cheerleader, coach who had no business being given the job. Thinking back to 2008 and even 2010 when they had the losing season, what are you privately thinking about Dabo at the time? What doubts did you have, if any? I'm just curious how that sort of a window into when things weren't so good.
Sure. Well, when he was named interim coach right away, I did think he had a chance, because my dealings with him, as far as dealing with the media, were terrific. I found him to be, the most honest guy going, and I thought that he did have kind of a sixth sense about things and other things about the program, again, with my dealings with him on as an assistant coach and the different interviews that he did. And the other thing that I was aware of, I think you probably did a story on too at one point, was he was on that committee that was involved with the special admits. He and Ron Bradley were two coaches, Ron Bradley from the basketball side. And I do know from talking to Terry Don when those meetings were going on how impressed he was, you know, with Dabo, and that, you know, he had the respect of the president and all the different people who were on from an administrative standpoint across campus. So from that standpoint, I knew he kind of got it there. So, but like anybody else, in the back of my mind, I thought, Jesus, you know, in this day and age, everybody's been a coordinator before they've been a head coach. And, you know, he had never been a coordinator, not to say, you know, he couldn't call plays or come up with an offensive plan or whatever, but I was not involved in those meetings to know how much of an input, you know, he had in that. But the other thing I thought, though, that was in his favor was his experience at Alabama, working with Coach Stallings. You know, he had been around a big-time program and a big-time organization, so figured he had some experience there. So certainly felt he had a chance to get the job and had a chance to be successful, but never dreamed it'd be to the extent it is today.
I would love to get into the evolution of your personal relationship with Dabo. I mean, I know that I guess back, this was probably 2010, 2011, he imposes some media access restrictions that drew some controversy at the time, and I know that was hard on you.
Yeah, it was.
Because you're an old school SID in that, yes, you worked for Clemson, but you were also sort of an intermediary. You were in the middle. You know, you try to look out for both the interest of both parties. What was that like for you? And I guess just for some context, you know, it was open season on access when Tommy Bowden was here, in fairness to Dabo, and he just wanted to tighten some things up. But a tightened up sort of arrangement was still kind of a jolt because of what everybody was used to before. What's your recollection of how that went?
Right. Well, you know, some of the things that he suggested, I agreed with 100%. You know, for instance, you know, with Coach Bowden, and then, you know, maybe his first year. I mean, you guys were interviewing players in the parking lot after practice. Well, you know, that wasn't good. And we do interviews right outside, you know, the locker room after practice downstairs here in Jervey. And we do a lot of stuff after practice, and he wanted to do things. He wanted to do the interviews around, you know, the lunch hour. And you know, when he explained all that to me, I agreed with him. He said, you know, players go out there, they have a tough practice, and it's going to affect, you know, if the coach was yelling at them during practice, it could affect their disposition when they're doing these interviews. He said, I'd much rather have them do the interviews during lunch. And so I was fine with that. The thing I had the hardest time with was shutting down the assistant coaches, with the exception of the coordinators. We were just in the area as a Notre Dame grad. You know, I'd just seen Charlie Weiss go through what he did at Notre Dame, and he had never done interviews when he was with the Patriots because Belichick didn't allow it, and he was just woefully unprepared to deal, you know, with the media. And, you know, did that have an effect on his failure, his last three seasons at Notre Dame? I don't know. It's interesting now today he's in the media with a show on XM radio, but I really thought, you know, at the top of it, it would have a negative effect on the assistant coaches who are trying to move on in their profession, and like I said, it would not prepare them for, you know, becoming a head coach someday. But anyway, you know, he got all these ideas and all these from Mack Brown. He went out to Texas and talked to him about that. Things that he had done in their system, and after you go through a losing season, you want to evaluate everything. So that's Dabo did and wanted to do. So looking back on it, you know, just about all the decisions he made, I think were good decisions, good for the program, and even though I still think the assistants should do some interviews at some point over the course of the season. But anyway, that's the way they're done now.
But a really stressful time for you, correct?
Yeah, it was. But we got through it, and then of course started 2011, and then winning calls cures all ills, so we moved on.
Can we talk about the evolution of the press box?
Okay.
It's obviously changed quite a bit. I recall stories from former newspaper guys or people who were college newspaper people back in the 80s and the old days. College kids who would, you know, they'd wear a Clemson shirt into the press box. Bob Bradley would quickly but kindly inform them that that's not acceptable and to please come back, leave and come back wearing more neutral apparel. Now it's a very common sight to see the team apparel in Clemson's press box and probably some other press boxes as well. I'm just curious, how did we get to this point because of the internet and things are so hard to define? There's more of a murky sort of definition of media because it's not newspaper, radio, TV. Now it's a bunch of different websites and it's hard to get a handle on them.
Yeah. It is the media has just totally, changed. And it is because of the internet, because you can form your own media, company just, kind of on your own. You don't have to work for an already established, you know, company. I mean, in the 80s and even early 90s, you know, you had to go work for an established company, whether it or a newspaper or whatever. But I mean, even looking back, your website started with you know, Chris Ard, and then, you know, he never worked for the Greenville News or the Anderson paper or whoever. But you know, and a lot of them have started that way. So we don't have a lot of media organizations that have gone through the University of Missouri Journalism School. So as a result, it has led to a totally different type of, and it's that way at other, you know, at other schools too. I mean, I hate to say it, you know, the way it's going to get worse because of the way the newspaper business is going, and papers are going, you know, out of business, or the staffs are getting much smaller. You know, we used to have the ACC bus tour where there'd be 30 guys from 30 different newspapers and television stations, and they'd go around the ACC and during the preseason and do stories. And and you know, now when North Carolina or Duke or whatever comes here, we, you know, we used to have 20 newspapers come and cover us, and you know, now we might have 3 or 4.
The national championship in Tampa. Deshaun Watson rolls to the right and throws to Hunter Renfrow for the game-winning touchdown. Where were you?
I was on the sidelines because obviously, and it's my job to facilitate post-game interviews with you know, of course, for that game, you had the television station, you had national radio, you had all kind of things that had to be done. And, of course, if we won, I was going to have a lot more work to do than if we lost. And so I had to be there just in case. But I was kind of at midfield. I actually watched that play looking at the Jumbotron in the end zone than I did watching it take place on the field. And, I just said to myself, you know, we knew this was it for Deshaun. We knew he was going to turn pro. And so, you know, the way we just moved the ball down the field, you just had a feeling that something special was going to happen. I never dreamed it would be to Hunter Renfrow. I figured it might be to Mike Williams. But it was a perfect play and great excitement.
You've never, through my observations, been the type of guy who, you know, after a big win, you're pumping your fist or jumping up and down or anything like that. Is that because of a sort of professional obligation, you know, to keep things sort of down the middle from an appearance standpoint? Or is it just because you're trying to process everything and think about what you have to do?
It's a little bit of both. I was raised in the sports information field from Mr. Bradley and Roger Valdeseri. You know, neither of them ever came to a game wearing anything that said Clemson on there. They always came in jackets and ties, whether it be a football game or a basketball game. I never saw Roger Valdeseri wear something that said Notre Dame on it. And then the same thing with, you know, with Mr. Bradley. And, you know, basically that was the way sports information people did it, just because of the optics and then the credibility that you want to establish with the media that you deal with, even though, you know, they know you want your team to win. I mean, there's no, you know, doubt about that. But yeah, I've always tried to, I'm trying to think if there was a time I mean, I'm sure I did a fist pump after Hunter Renfrow's, catch, but I didn't go run on the field or anything like that. If I ran on the field, it was after the game trying to chase down Hunter Renfrow to do some interviews.
So that wasn't you on top of Dabo. That was Jeff Scott.
That was Jeff Scott on the jumping on the pile. Yeah.
So you're the typical routine for you. I think this is kind of interesting. So you're on the field after a game, arranging TV interviews on the field for whoever's covering the game. And then you're the first person that Dabo talks to after he leaves the locker room and has talked to the team, correct? or
no, this is before he talks to the team.
Okay, before he talks to the
yeah,
team.
Yeah, I've always, yeah, that'll be a little different. I think for him too. Every game he ever coached, head coaching, and I did it with coach, just about every coach, I guess. But yeah, Dabo would go to the center of the field for the festivities at the Paw, and he'd go into the coach's room. He'd sit down on his chair, and he'd pull out some little pad of paper, said, "All right, what do we do?" So, you know, I'd give him some facts or whatever that I kept track of, some of the accomplishments. And, you know, then he would go into the meet with the team, say what he wanted to do, and then he would and then all of a sudden he'd say, "All right, offensively," and then he'd say what we did, and then defensively or whatever, any other notes or, you know, this was our 17th straight win, which is a school, you know, whatever. And then he'd use those a lot, of those facts with his, as you well know, in his post-game press conferences. But I tried to put the game, because when you're on the field and, you know, it's totally different. You're just kind of taking play by play, drive by drive. So to have an overall understanding of what was accomplished or what happened in the game. The last game, I guess, that I will have done that was the Alabama game where we lost 28-6. So I tried to put a little bit in perspective that, you know, the defense didn't play that poorly. They actually played pretty well. And I pointed out the fact that the whole game was defensive, that it was a few-ish yards gained by both teams combined since the 1969 Sugar Bowl, ironically a game that Terradon Phillips played in. You know, I tried to put things so to give him a little bit of perspective when he did his press conference and when he talked to the team also. So, you know, you go by the feeling it's never as good as it seems when you win and never as bad as it seems when you lose. So I usually try to give them some facts to put it in perspective.
You just mentioned that stat, the fewest combined yards, whatever. All right, how do you come up with – okay, so you're in the press box watching the game, and then you're having to go down to the field, and you're walking around arranging all these interviews. You don't have time to
– Well, before I go down, I will look at things. And so being a good sports information director, it's as much as knowing – the right questions to ask yourself and where to find the answers. And a lot of that comes from, and this is why I've always been big on having printed press guides. So before the game, I'm sitting in the press box and I got a hold of the Sugar Bowl record book. And so I went through there and I noticed that they in very nice, concise manner, they had a year-by-year listing of the matchup of team statistics for the games. And so it was very easy. It would have, you know, total offense, rushing offense, whatever. So it was very easy game by game to just add it up what the total offense was of the two teams combined. And so when the game got late, you know, there weren't many yards for either team and it was less than 500 yards total offense, so I just thought to look that up. So
Let's shift to Dabo's rants, saving some of the best for last. There are a lot to choose from. I'm just curious, do you ever have an inkling? Did you ever have an? I guess we're talking about this in present tense. We need to talk about it in the past. But did you ever have an inkling that any of those were coming? Like, would he say, like, you know what? I'm sick of hearing this. Seeing this on ESPN, and the next time somebody asks me about it, I'm going to go off. Any such instance of that?
You know, I was around him so much, and I would try to predict or have a feeling. Some of them I did, but you know, if a basic of your question is, are his rants premeditated? The answer is no. He does not premeditate his rants. He just it just kind of hits him. Like when we went into the post game of the Notre Dame game, and David Hale asked him about would this win eliminate?
I think that was Georgia Tech.
Was it Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech in 2015.
Okay, I thought it was a Notre Dame game. But anyway, Clemsoning. And so but I knew when he asked that question, I knew it was coming. But obviously going into the press conference, I had no idea that question was gonna come. No, unfortunately, they're kind of hard to predict. I mean, we talk about what he's going to address in his press conference. I would meet with him each Tuesday before he went in there. And so, you know, things that are out there, but a lot of the things that he has been demonstrative about just kind of came up.
What some people out there might not realize is that where he will absolutely go off on somebody for asking a question or whatever, it's not like he holds this big grudge. Like David Hale, I think Dabo reached out to him that night and said, "Hey man, okay, I'm sorry, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You were just the victim there, you know, of something I
no,
have been
you're right, it's a good point. And it's almost like he is with his players, he'll be the same way with the media. I've seen him, you know, just rip into a player for being lazy or not hustling, whatever. And then when the practice is over, he'll walk out the field with his arm around him and say, "Now, you know, you need to do better." And it's the same way if he gets on somebody in the media. I mean, even you could be testimony to this, that, you know, he's not going to, you know, treat you unfairly or whatever down the road.
Should we bring up the December of 2016 Ohio State bowl practices when I wasn't walking fast enough off the practice field and you weren't making sure that I was walking fast enough off the practice field? And
he got on both of us that day, didn't he?
That was a blistering. Wow. He was. But I think what that illustrates sort of is a window into, okay, hey, you know, the average person sees Dabo when he's in front of a microphone, you know, telling jokes for the most part and being real folksy and, you know, telling great stories and being entertaining. But he is a football coach. And behind closed doors, especially when he's pursuing a national championship and getting ready for a semifinal game against Ohio State, he is dialed in and very serious and does not spare many, I guess, faults or mistakes. And so we were on the receiving end of that day.
You're correct. But, you know, subsequent times after that, he, you know, would go out of his way. You'd meet with him privately after a practice, you know, to just get some quotes on something. And so.
What is your favorite, I guess, behind the scenes image or memory from that national championship night in Tampa?
My favorite behind, I don't know how behind the scenes it was, but a little bit in the locker room, seeing in particular Deshaun Watson, knowing that that was his last game, and just kind of at his locker, you know, and he was crying because he knew it was over, but he knew what greatness had been done. And you know, there were some times in my dealings with Deshaun that, you know, he wouldn't do some interviews that I asked him to do. He was always pretty good about coming every Tuesday and you know, meeting with you guys. But you had to look at his world too. I mean, the guy was taken 19 hours and 18 hours. And I mean, nobody was doing what he was, you know, and be the quarterback and have all this pressure on him. So he was really quite remarkable in that regard. And so just seeing him take it all in and experience it and all the hard work that he had put in, that was kind of a good thing to see, and kind of enjoyed that.
Back to the rants, right? I meant to ask this. The 2011 Spurrier rant 2 days before the ACC championship game.
Right.
I think that was somewhat premeditated. No, I didn't. Dabo want that question to sort of.
Yeah, that one might have been premeditated. Yeah, that one might have been premeditated. Yeah, you know, obviously that, you know, losing to South Carolina got under his skin. It's, you would expect. He's a competitor. And so, yeah, he wanted a rebuttal.
So this was on a Thursday, I think. But the Tuesday, the formal press conference at the West End Zone, I guess it was then, I'll never forget, the press conference is over, and he's remaining at the podium, and he's sort of tapping his fingers like he's waiting for another question mm-hmm. to be asked, and I think he was maybe waiting on.
It didn't happen.
That question. Did you know that was coming? That he was gonna.
He was ready with an answer. Yes, okay. I didn't know that. We discussed that ahead of time. Yeah, and so then after the game, I guess leading up to the ACC championship game, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was 2 days before, the Virginia yeah. Tech game. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Do you think that in part he's trying to sort of take the target off of his players in that moment, because rewinding, they had gotten smashed by Georgia Tech, smashed by NC State in Raleigh the week before,
right.
and then smashed by South Carolina back then. Let's see, that would have been the third straight loss to South Carolina, which was like apocalyptic
yeah.
at that point. And so yeah. maybe he's trying to just steer the conversation away from his players and maybe get everybody talking about him, something else, you think?
You know, we never talked about that. We never, you know, you always heard historically about coaches, even back to Al McGuire used to do that when he was the basketball coach at Marquette. He was famous for putting everything on him. But we never talked about that, although that obviously ended up happening, and then we ended up killing Virginia Tech in the championship. So it did take a lot of the focus on that, but we did not discuss it that way.
It's amazing how narratives work. Okay, so like, let's say Virginia Tech wins that game, then that rant becomes a central part of the criticism moving forward. Like, he was too busy worried about South Carolina and they couldn't focus on Virginia Tech, but as it happened, they kill Virginia Tech. And if anything, you know, that rant is viewed as sort of a catalyst in sort of helping them move past what happened before. I guess it's just like you said earlier.
Although we lost the next game 70-33 yeah. to West Virginia, so yeah, I know. Yeah, you're right. There are different moments that certainly, if the games went the other way, they could be could really turn into a negative. There's been a number of things where that's happened. So maybe we put too much into those. I don't know. That West Virginia game, I always felt that we had so much was made of. We hadn't won an ACC championship in 20 years. And then when we finally did it, there was such a feeling of relief and accomplishment that I think the players going to that West Virginia game, well, we've already done it. We just, not that they were just going to show up, but that the game didn't mean anything. I mean, it meant a lot, but I think they just had such a feeling of satisfaction already going into that game.
If Clemson ends up in Santa Clara for the national championship, you got a spot reserved on the calendar to.
It depends. I am going to do Clemson basketball on the radio, so that will actually be up to the radio network people, which takes priority. I will not have a golf tournament though that'll interrupt me during that time. My first golf tournament in 2019 will be in Phoenix the last weekend in February. So yeah, I'd love to go. My college roommate is the voice of the San Francisco 49ers, Ted Robinson, and they play in that stadium. So he says it's a wonderful stadium, so it'd be fun to see.
Well, Tim, it's been an honor and a pleasure for you to be the Clemson Dubcast guest number 3. And I know a lot of you won't be in the press box for the Furman game, but I know your spirit will be there and you'll be missed for sure.
Well, thanks, Larry, and I just want to say it's been great, working with you for many years, back to your days of a beat writer for the traditional paper, and you always treated us professionally, and I know you're going to continue to do that, and I look forward to continue to reading your stories.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate that.
All right.
All right, that'll do it. Thank you to Tim for sharing his time with us. Thank you to title sponsor Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in Greenville. Also, the Abernathy Boutique Hotel in Clemson. And our newest sponsor, Tandem Payment in Greenville. Thank you to the City Champs for providing some excellent bumper music. Most of all, thank you all for listening. Any questions, comments, suggestions, ClemsonDubcast@gmail.com. Stay tuned for the next one to drop Friday. You can download it, listen to it in the car on your way up to Tigertown on Friday or Saturday. That's it for now. Everybody have a great week. Game week.